Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the first ever Slime Grind Radio, the only podcast dedicated to grinding slimes in no time. I am your host today, Bradley, alongside my co-hosts, Brandon and Ryan. Guys, how are we doing today? This is an exciting day for Dragon Quest, right?
Doing well, yeah, it's pretty exciting.
Yes, I'm stoked.
Good, that's where we need to be for this podcast. So this is our first podcast of what we hope to be many, exclusively devoted to bringing you all the latest news, updates, analysis, and cogitations on anything related to Square Enix's MMO Dragon Quest X, of course. I guess you could call this a bit of a pilot episode, where we hope to sort of evaluate the level of interest for this type of thing. As longtime fans of the JRPG genre, as well as the Dragon Quest franchise as a whole, Brandon, Ryan, and I decided that talking about DQX10 would be a great way to shed some light on the title, especially since no one else is doing it currently, and especially since we've recently gotten word that the game is going to be coming overseas, and so this is kind of a perfect time to prep people for that. But before we just dive right into things, I want to give us a chance to talk about kind of what each of us is bringing to the table in terms of Dragon Quest knowledge and MMO knowledge. Since this is our first podcast, it's probably only right to sort of let you guys in on who we are and what we do and why we're doing this. So I'm going to throw it to Ryan, let you kick us off.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, my interest in the Dragon Quest games goes basically as far back as the series goes in North America. The Legend of Zelda was kind of the video game that got me into video games. And then as a young NES owner, I was always looking for the next, that sort of experience. And I got Dragon Warrior after I had already had Final Fantasy, and I had finished that. You just kind of, during that era, you just sort of stumbled upon games. You would see them in Nintendo Power, and then you would seek them out and maybe not find them for a long time. But, I played through Final Fantasy, loved it. Dragon Quest was what I found next, or Dragon Warrior. And, played through that and loved it. And then, didn't really play another game in the series for quite a few years, but still a huge fan of the series, played all the recent ones, and I love Dragon Quest.
So you're going all the way back to the beginning. I mean, you started with it right as it released here in North America, so you're kind of our resident guru when it comes to being with the series from conception to where it is now, right?
In a way, I mean, I didn't get it right when it came out. It was probably, since it was after Final Fantasy, it was probably like late 1990, early 91 when I finally got my copy of the game. And then I never had a chance to play 2, 3, or 4 on NES because I could never find them.
Cool. My experience, I'm Brandon. Kind of started a similar trajectory, but kind of opposite. I also got into Final Fantasy very early, but stuck kind of with the Final Fantasy series. I got into it in the SNES days. Didn't really touch any of the Dragon Quest series at all until the PlayStation era, when randomly, I had played Final Fantasy VII and VIII, and I was very into those games. But then I had been hearing about this Dragon Quest thing, and it seemed like extra legit, because it was even more underground or less people knew about it. So I remember I rented Dragon Quest VII was the first one that I played, and that game just blew me away. So then I played 8, and then after that 9, and now I hope to play 10. I've just always been interested. I've actually made my career now playing and making video games kind of based on some of the experiences I had in those early Final Fantasies and Dragon Quest games. But I know more of the latter half of the Dragon Quest series than maybe some of the earlier ones.
Yeah, so I'm kind of a mishmash of both of your guys' approach, in that I didn't play the game right when it first came out. Actually, my first exposure to the title, or to any of the titles, was with Brandon. He had gotten Dragon Quest VII, and at the time I was on this, of course, this Final Fantasy VII kick, and anything with the Roman numeral VII in it, I wanted to play, because I felt like it just had to be as good as Final Fantasy VII. And so I came over to Brandon's house one day and watched him play and kind of fell in love there, and then afterward I ended up playing VII myself, playing VIII, played IX, but then I went back and played 4, 5, and 6 on DS as they were released, and I really got into them at that point. Dragon Quest IX sort of opened my eyes to the Dragon Quest world so much more than anything prior to that. Although I had enjoyed 8 a ton, and of course 7 was great, something about 9 just resonated with me. I don't know if it was kind of like where I was at in my life or where I was at just in terms of my gaming at that time. But I really liked it. It sparked enough interest for me to go back and play 4, 5, and 6. And so that's what I did. And I'm probably one of about 12 people who actually like Dragon Quest Swords. I've never met another person on this planet that likes that game. I love it for whatever reason. And no one probably remembers that game because it was exclusively
for
the Wii.
I enjoyed it. It was good.
It was great. Yeah. It was a quick little bite-sized Dragon Quest spinoff, and I dug. I was really digging it. So yeah, it sounds like this trifecta here, we've sort of covered all bases. We have all sorts of knowledge, and we're all coming at this franchise from a different spot, and at the same time, we have very similar experiences, it sounds like, with the games. So I hope that makes us qualified to talk about Dragon Quest X somewhat knowledgeably. I can't ever promise that what I say will be coherent, but I'm going to try my best to make sure that it is, and so that we can talk about Dragon Quest X in the way that it deserves.
And real quick, one thing I wanted to say is that we all have the shared experience of Dragon Quest IX, and I think when kind of discussing Dragon Quest X, that's probably the most important game in the series. They're probably the most similar.
Yeah, I would agree with that too. It seems like they're taking a lot of the foundation laid down in 9 and just kind of opening up the game into a multiplayer 9, really. Which it almost began to go that direction anyway on 9.
Yeah, everything that I've seen and everything that I've read about Dragon Quest X, it's clear that they drew a ton of inspiration from 9. I mean, 9 got such a great reception, and I think its mechanics and just its general design philosophy lended itself so well to a massively multiplayer game. Like you guys said, they took a lot from 9. A lot's just been straight up lifted from 9 and superimposed in 10. So yeah, we'll probably be talking a lot about Dragon Quest X as it relates to 9 for that reason, and also because there's not a ton of information available for us right now when it gets into like the nitty-gritty details of the game, like, you know, what spells do and what spells will be associated with certain classes. And at that point, we can draw back to Dragon Quest IX because that's probably the closest game to 10. I want to also build on what Ryan said, in that we also all have the shared experiences of MMOs. We've all played MMOs, I think, right, guys?
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know about you guys, but I love MMOs, to be honest. It's probably one of, if not my favorite, genre. It just seems conducive with my play style at this point in my life, and I think Brandon said it before, I feel like I've played like every MMO around. What about you guys?
Yeah, I've played, you know, since, I'm trying to think what the first was that I played. I think it was Dark Ages of Camelot with you, Bradley. And then from there, just kind of been interested. I remember I was in the WoW beta. I played Guild Wars and City of Heroes and all of it. Pretty much after the WoW beta, I was like, I've got to check out all these games now. And so whenever one would come out, I'd check it out. I've played a lot of them, haven't stuck with many. You know, it takes a difficult game to really, or like a really good game to get me to stick with it. And I don't feel like MMOs have that many stand out, like, this is fantastic. I'm hoping for this from Dragon Quest X. Currently, I'm playing a lot of Final Fantasy XIV, as it's the new hot game out, and it's got all those trappings I love.
The new hotness?
Yeah, the new hotness. What about you, Ryan?
Well, I started with the original EverQuest, and that was a very, like, absolutely crazy experience for me, because, I mean, I'd never played anything like it before, and despite it being, like, the most aggressive game against the user that I've probably ever played, like, my friends and I, we were just, like, captivated by it, and played that for a fair amount of time. And it's funny, like, I mean, I played that game for months and never even got close to the level cap, which is something most people do in the, like, 30-day trials of new MMOs now. But yeah, I mean, I've played most of them since. Like, I mean, I played Dark Age of Camelot, as you guys mentioned. I stuck with EverQuest 2 for quite some time. That game had a really great community, which kept me going, and which is kind of an issue with MMOs. I was also in the WoW beta, and I played WoW up through Cataclysm, and so I have a level 85 character in WoW, but I doubt I will ever go back to that. Spent a little bit of time with FF11, but it was a little too hardcore for me, and I'm also playing Final Fantasy XIV, and I'm starting to feel like it's a game that just does not work with my lifestyle, with the potential time commitments involved, and that's why I'm really, really excited for Dragon Quest X, because it's supposed to be the casual MMO for Japanese housewives and elementary school children, and that's kind of basically what I'm looking for right now.
So maybe we should go around and kind of talk about what we're all expecting from 10 to start, you know, what kind of experience we're looking for. It sounds like you're looking for a more casual sort of pick up and play, don't have to play every day for X amount of hours. And I personally, I'm looking for a similar situation. That's my biggest drawback on MMOs, especially as I get older. I have less time to devote to those sorts of things. And I just want to be able to jump on, play with my friends, not have to worry about, oh, what level are we? What class are we? Can we get together? Does this even make sense? I just kind of want to jump on and play an RPG together with my friends, you know, around the world. And that's why I am excited about the game. I think it's got a lot of potential there. The Dragon Quest series has always lent itself pretty well to just picking up and playing, as hardcore as it can be. I feel like the battling system and things like that. I remember when I was playing 7, I would just start it up, play for 20 minutes, like grind a little bit, and then just be done, which was almost MMO gameplay before MMOs were very popular. What about you, Bradley?
Yeah, so I guess I sort of expect, or at least I'm wanting, something that splits the difference between an accessible MMO and something a little hardcore. So yeah, it's really difficult to keep up with MMOs at this stage. I've just got a lot of different commitments and priorities. That being said, I do like my MMOs to have a hardcore side to them. You know, there's a reason why I don't play free-to-play MMOs, and it's because they're a little too pick-up-and-play oriented, and I actually don't like that. I like having to devote a good amount of time in each play session to really make progress, because I feel like that allows the experience to have meaning. It allows it to feel special when you hit, you know, a certain level, when you accomplish a certain feat in the game, and I like that. I guess from Dragon Quest X, I really want it to incorporate the elements that we've seen in other Dragon Quest games. I want to see the mechanics and see the aspects that have made Dragon Quest what it is, and at the same time, I want to see some of some innovative, and at the same time, I want to see some traditional MMO design mechanics to sort of round out the package. So yeah, so I've thought of Dragon Quest X as sort of like a more accessible version of Final Fantasy XI, and we can get into why that is later on down the road, or later in this episode. But that's sort of what I'm expecting and what I'm hoping that we get from it.
Cool, that sounds awesome. Yeah. I think I agree. I agree in certain points how you... Because, you know, I made it sound like I really want a very, like, casual, mid-core kind of game. But I'm with you where I want it to be hardcore in some aspects. Like, I want there to be skill involved. And that's what a lot of the free-to-plays are missing, is, like, that skill, that, like, knowledge base that you need to be successful. I still want that. I just don't want to have to sit on a server for 10 hours waiting for someone, the correct class, to come join my party.
Yeah, I think what you described, Bradley, with, you know, wanting your levels to mean something, I think that's something that's very prevalent through the Dragon Quest series. Because, like, I mean, the early Dragon Quest games, there's, like, level caps at, like, 30 or 50 or whatever. And, I mean, it's kind of like the Ease games as well. Like, when you gain a level in those games, you feel like... you feel actually powerful, like more powerful. And a lot of MMOs, you gain 20 levels in 3 hours, and you don't even know what skills you're getting. You don't get the proper time to kind of, you know, test out your new abilities and stuff. And I think that's important. And from what I've heard and read, DQ10 does offer that, so that's good. But as far as what I want most, and I think what would keep me coming back to DQ10, which I think there's a good chance of this existing, is just a really good community. And like I mentioned before, with EverQuest 2, that's what kind of kept me with that game, was just like really mature and friendly people. It was such a contrast to the type of people who were playing WoW. And like, I mean, you go in the general chat in some of these MMOs and it's like YouTube comment section, and it's just like, why would I want to spend 10 hours of my weekend with these like awful people?
I call them heathens.
Yeah. That's putting it nicely.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're right. I think community is such an important aspect of any MMO, because if we think about it, these are the people that we're going to be playing the game with always. It's not like, you know, Final Fantasy XIV has an offline mode. That doesn't exist. You're always connected and you're always surrounded by people. And a community can really make or break a game. I remember, and this is totally off base here, but there was this game that came out couple years ago called Global Agenda from Hi-Rez Studios, the guys that did Tribes, the newest Tribes game. And it was one of the worst communities I've ever been in. I mean, Warcraft's community paled in comparison to the hate that was being spewed in the general chat channel in Global Agenda. And I ended up stopping playing Global Agenda strictly because the community was so god-awful. So yeah, I too am hoping that Dragon Quest X's community is tight-knit, and that there's a real sense of people working together, wanting to help each other. That's something actually that I liked about Final Fantasy XI a ton. It's probably why it's the MMO that I've spent the most time with. I know it gets kind of some backlash in this regard, but I always had wonderful experiences with the community. In XI, people were always helpful, willing to help out in any way they could. And I, you know, I did the same thing back. You know, you pay it forward. And I hope that Dragon Quest X has that. But I think we can get into talking about some of that stuff a little later. I want to take some time to chat about the basics of what Dragon Quest X is all about. There's probably some listeners out there that don't know a lot about the game, and rightfully so, because as I mentioned earlier, there's just not a lot of info and details out there to sort of shed some light. For whatever reason, Square really hasn't pulled the curtain back on Dragon Quest X, and so I hope we can do some of that here. Now, let's take some time to talk about kind of the foundation work of Dragon Quest X and what it's all about. And when I think of kind of that foundational core of any MMO, I don't know about you guys, but I immediately think of races and classes. So I want to spend some time talking. Let's go with races first. There's about six races Well, there's not about six races. There are six races. So does someone want to run through what the races are here?
Yeah, so we've got like four races that everybody's kind of familiar with. Human, Ogre, Dwarf, Elf. These are not new to the Dragon Quest series. And then there's two new races that are coming. The Puklipo, I hope I'm saying that right, and the Weddy. These are brand new to the series, and they seem a little bizarre in my opinion. I don't know, maybe we should talk about this. What do you guys think? Maybe, well, Bradley, you want to describe the Puklipo and the Weddy a little bit clearer?
Sure. I think we can probably best describe the Puklipo as Dragon Quest's answer to the Tarutaru or the Lalafell, Final Fantasy XI and XIV, respectively, because they're just these short, chibi guys who are super cute, whereas the Weddy are pretty unique, I think, in any game that I've played. So Weddy are kind of like fish-like creatures. They're humanoid, so they resemble a human in some way, but they have gills, they have these fancy ears.
They kind of remind me of the Zora from Zelda games. Like the water people from the Zelda games.
Definitely. That's exactly like that was my first thought upon seeing them.
So yeah, we have sort of a point of reference for both of these new races. I guess what I'm wondering, so the Puklipo and the Weddy, this is the first time that they're appearing in a Dragon Quest game. Is this the right time to do that? I mean, you know, an MMO is sort of a niche genre, despite the meaning of its name. Yes, MMOs are a big deal, but the truth is there's only a portion of gamers that actually play them. And I think that portion is probably substantially smaller than the portion of folks who are just going to play a traditional RPG. So I guess I'm wondering, maybe you guys have an answer for this. With these two new races appearing for the first time in Dragon Quest X, was this the right approach to take, or should these have been introduced in a mainstay, more traditional Dragon Quest game?
Well, I see it... I don't know. So if we're just going to say, should they have added them or should they not have, I would say it was good of them to add them. I didn't want to have four classes. Human, Ogre, Dwarf, Elf. Yeah, you get a lot of variety there. But sort of how you mentioned before, the Puklipo are the short, cute, chibi characters. It seems like that's now a mainstay in MMOs. You've got to have that silly character where it's just like... I don't know, it's almost funny seeing them blast off huge magic attacks or whatever because they're so tiny. So I think that was kind of a good move. Almost a no-brainer. They had to have something like that. And it fits the world really well. They already have very, like, silly races of characters. The Weddy is a little bit more complex. I'm not really sure why they chose a water creature versus, I don't know, anything else. It could have been a rock creature, could have been anything. I think they look cool, and so I'm excited about them. I am cautious as to whether or not they're going to feel like they're part of the world that I know and love. You would have think you'd heard about them before this. But then going back to my main point, I would rather have six classes than four any day. Or races, sorry, races. What do you think, Ryan?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's a good call because, you know, the game is the five tribes or whatever is in the subtitle. And that was kind of what they wanted to go for. And I mean, there really just wasn't enough in Dragon Quest lore previously. I mean, they had to invent stuff because I don't think launching an MMO with only four races would have been a good call for the genre. And, yeah, I don't know. As far as, I mean, they can always, Dragon Quest XI doesn't necessarily have to have, like, weddies in it if they don't want to. I mean, this could just be, they could just write it off as, oh, that's this part of the world. And then, or a different world or whatever.
I would just say, I do think, like, if they're going to add classes, they did a good thing creating new class, because I can imagine them going maybe more of, like, a World of Warcraft, where they're like, well, we want to keep in the races that we already have, so instead of adding a new full race, we're going to do Blood Elves. I didn't want, like, a bunch of different tribes of elves and humans and ogres. I'm glad that they at least went and, you know, reapproached the character design, made them their own separate thing. Like a Weddy and a Puklipo, you know, are going to have their own backstories and own towns that look their own way and things like that. I think at least they didn't go the generic route.
Sure. No, I mean, you guys make a great point that four tribes or races sure is better than, or isn't as good as six. So it makes sense that they needed something. I mean, you can't launch an MMO in this day and age and only have four choices because, as Ryan said before, that the subtitle of the game in Japan is Rise of the Five Tribes. So for those out there, you can just do simple math. You probably equated or came up with the idea that, well, we're talking about six races here, but in the subtitle, they're only mentioning five. And there's a reason behind that. So this is kind of an interesting aspect of Dragon Quest X, something that I want to talk about here. It's got an offline mode, and then it has, obviously, its online portion. Interestingly enough, Square has chosen to not allow players to play as a human character online.
What?
I think eventually, right. I think eventually you have the option to revert back to a human when you play online. But basically, there's some stuff that happens in the offline portion of the game to where you cannot play a human once you go online.
Well, you should clarify that the offline portion you play completely as a human, you can only play as a human, then something happens and you have to choose something other than a human.
Right, so that leaves us with the core five tribes to choose from. So, yeah, initially you start off as a human offline, you go through basically what's like an extended tutorial campaign, and then you go online and you've got at your disposal the ogre, dwarf, elf, Puklipo, and Weti. No human in sight. Is this a good option? I don't know about you guys, but I see a lot of human characters when I run around in MMOs. That seems to just be a safe choice for people. It's kind of like, well, I don't really want to play something weird. I don't want to play an elf. I don't want to play this, you know, this ogre, this big hulking character. I don't want to play this little Tarutaru guy. I just want to stick to the basics. I just want to be human. And basically, Dragon Quest X is saying, nope, we're not going to allow that. Is that a good choice?
Well, I'm curious, do you know how long you will play as a human in the offline mode? I'd heard it's almost a little too long. It's like 5 hours or something you have to play offline before you can even join the online.
Yeah, I've heard everything between 2 and 20 hours.
Yeah.
So that's pretty interesting. So you at least will get initiated into the human side. I think it's a good move. I am one of those people that always plays human, just because it's, I guess it's a comfort thing, or maybe I just think they look cooler and I want to see like human armor on a person, not like weird dwarf armor. But I kind of think it's cool because this is going to put me out of my comfort zone and I won't feel like, God, I don't want to say race traitor, but that's what keeps coming into my head. I won't feel like I'm not playing it seriously, I guess. Just because I'm not playing as a human. It'll be nice to kind of be forced to choose a race other than human and actually feel legitimized that way.
I have strong anti-human sentiments. I actually never play as humans in MMOs. I'm very much an elf person. That's always just what's appealed to me. And that's just always what I've played. So I still get to stay in my comfort zone for this game.
Yeah, me too. I mostly play, I'm one of the guys that plays the short little people. So I'm stoked about the incorporation of the Puklipo. Not being able to play as a human really doesn't bother me personally. I think that some people probably will have an issue with it. But again, it's kind of like what you were saying, Brandon. I think it's a good opportunity to make people step outside their comfort zone. And I think it's the small stuff that sets games apart. When you're in the genre of an MMO, there's only so much you can do to innovate because so much has already been done. And truly, it's one of those genres that has pretty strict limitations and parameters placed upon it. So you really have to learn to differentiate yourself in the smallest of ways. And I think this is one of those things that Square has done where, despite, yeah, they might get some backlash for it, though I don't think it'll be all that significant, it still is one of those elements that will make the game stand out just a little bit more from a very, very crowded genre. But enough about the races. So let's take some time to talk about the classes in Dragon Quest X, because as we're going to see, in a lot of senses, these are very, I used the word before, I'm going to use it again because I think it applies. These are very safe choices, at least the base classes here. They're very traditional. And at the same time, I think that's what people might find comfort in. So there's six base classes in the game. There's a warrior, martial artist, mage, priest, thief, and minstrel. This is nothing new to the Dragon Quest universe. These are the characters that have been around almost since the beginning. And so, do you guys have any thoughts kind of on these six base classes? Are these the classes you want to see initially anyway? Because there are advanced classes that we'll get into here in a second, but when you initially fire up the game, these are going to be the ones from which you're going to choose. Are these what you want?
Personally, I think it's fine. It seems like they're covering all their bases. You've got two kind of like hand-to-hand fighting type guys, the warrior and the martial artist. You've got the mage and the priest, which will be your magical, and then your thief and minstrel, which will be kind of your support. At least that's how I read it. I'm totally okay with this. I am generally a warrior class player. I like to run around with swords. Just ever since my love of Zelda and Final Fantasy games, I just want to be a sword guy. One thing I'm kind of hoping for is a little bit more deviation from the Holy Triad MMO class standard, where it's like the warrior, yeah, you've got a big sword and you look cool, but you're not actually dealing the damage, you're just kind of like absorbing all the damage from the enemies. I want to see them get away from that. So I'm not so concerned with what the classes actually are, and more concerned with how they play.
What about you, Ryan?
Yeah, this is fine. I actually got out of my comfort zone for the first time with Final Fantasy XIV, and I tried actually playing a tank character, and it was pretty much like the worst experience I've ever had playing a new tank for the first time in an MMO in a pickup group. So I think I'm done with that, and I think I'm ready to go back to just DPS. And, I mean, again, we sort of don't know how the game flow of this is. And if it is, like, the... I mean, FF14 is incredibly stringent in, like, the group makeup. It's, you've got your two DPS, your one healer, and your one tank. And that's the way you play. It's the right way, and
yeah,
it's the way you have to play.
Limit instances to where you can only literally, like, even if I am, let's say I'm a DPS, but I can play tank, they don't even let me. If my class is described as a DPS class, you can only have, you know, two of those in a party when you're going into an instance. It's down to mechanically, they limit what kind of stuff you can get into. I'm hoping to see a lot more fluidity between the classes. It seems like it's a little bit more of a single player-ish experience, so I'm imagining a warrior will be able to hold his own and not just be there to absorb hits. I'm not sure.
Yeah, and you never really find that out until you're like level 20 or so in
MMOs.
Right,
and you're totally devoted. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
and it's been frustrating for me being a kind of person who wants to play with a sword but doesn't want a tank. Like you said, you got out of your comfort zone with 14. I also did, and I started playing a Thaumaturge, which is their kind of damage-dealing magic guy. And I've been really enjoying it, and I've kicked myself for having played, you know, the warrior for all, you know, the past 5 or 6 MMOs that I have played. But at the same time, shouldn't I be able to just play whatever role I want to, even though, I don't know, it's so limiting, and maybe it's just an argument against MMOs in general, but I would like to see them get away from such minutely defined roles.
It seems that Square really likes those role restrictions, though, when it comes to their games. Final Fantasy XI had it. We're seeing that Final Fantasy XIV has it. And from everything that I've seen and read about, Dragon Quest X does not deviate from the quote-unquote norm in that regard. I think the six base classes, first off, when I see them, I immediately think of Final Fantasy XI. These are practically the same exact classes that were in Final Fantasy XI. Not necessarily the starting classes in XI, but all of these classes were in XI at some point. And I keep bringing up Final Fantasy XI as it pertains to Dragon Quest X, because I think the two share an abundance of similarities. And I think we see that in the class system, because Square seems to be heavily relying upon the Trinity system, and Dragon Quest X probably even more so than Final Fantasy XIV, I think, from what I've seen. It seems that, you know, if you're a warrior, you're tanking, and that's all you're going to do. If you're a priest, all you're doing is healing. And I actually think that they're sticking to some of the conventions even more so with some of these roles and classes. Since we're talking about Final Fantasy XIV so much here, I'll throw out that I'm playing a conjurer. For the past 10 years, I've always played a priest. I'm always a healer. And I'm playing a healer again in 14. And the one thing I've noticed is that this time around in 14, as a healer, I actually have some damage dealing capabilities. I can solo effectively, and I don't always have to be in a party, which is the complete opposite of how it was in Final Fantasy XI, where if you were a white mage, you better be very comfortable with always partying to level up in that game, because you're not going to be able to solo anything. From everything that I've seen, that is very, very much so true in Dragon Quest X, where the priest, especially, and again, I'm kind of focusing on the priest because I think that's probably what I'll roll, it seems to be very pigeonholed into you are just a healing class, good luck trying to solo. Now, the good news about Dragon Quest X is they've implemented some systems that have alleviated having to solo, especially for some of these classes that aren't particularly great at doing so. We'll get into that here in a bit, but I guess I'm a little worried here in that the Trinity system seems to be in full effect to Dragon Quest X. Whether or not it comes out that way, I guess, remains to be seen. Do you guys think any of these classes will be overpowered?
I think that by the time the game launches, well, I don't want to say if it launches, but it's still, we don't have a date, we don't have a platform, but we know they're trying to figure out something for the game coming out here. But I think by the time Square Enix figures that out and rolls out a Western release, I feel like the game's been out in Japan since summer of last year. So I think the balance issues should be taken care of.
Yeah, no, you make a good point, because essentially the Japanese will be the guinea pig for the North American release. So by the time that it comes to us, I surely hope that Square has ironed out all the kinks at that point, because they've had plenty of time to do so.
Well, I'm curious. I had also read that they were adding classes to the Japanese version of the game. I forget which they were. And I'm curious if we're actually going to get those at launch or not. I'm not too worried about any of them being overpowered or anything like that. Kind of like Ryan said, that they'll handle that in the Japanese launch, and I'm sure they already have a pretty good handle on it. You don't often see Square make big missteps in this area. And it's kind of always a constant process too. You nerf one guy, oh no, now you have to like pump up the other one. Okay, now we nerf them both. It just goes back and forth constantly. I'm not too worried about it.
So, well, you bring up a good point that these six base classes are just that. They're just base classes. There are actually five other advanced classes that are in the game as we speak with the Japanese release. So, and many of you will probably know these classes if you've played Dragon Quest IX. There's five additional classes. We've got our Gladiator, our Sage, our Paladin, our Ranger, and our Armamentalist, or as they're being called now, in 10, the Mage Knight. So again, all of these are obtained through a specific quest, just like Dragon Quest IX. From everything that I've seen through videos and translated text, they seem to operate and function in the same exact way. So your Gladiator is a dual-weaponed DPS. Your Sage is someone who sort of splits the difference between an offensive mage and a priest. So they've got some buffs, they've got some heals, they've also got some decent spells that can dish out some punishment. The Paladin is a self-healing tank. Your Ranger is, of course, focusing on ranged attacks. And your Mage Knight is sort of like, you can probably best think of them as a Red Knight from Final Fantasy, in terms of they fight with swords, they have some melee capabilities, but then they also have a heavy emphasis on magic. So again, nothing new there, but it's wonderful to see that when all is said and done, that we have 11 classes to choose from. That's pretty impressive.
Well, that makes me feel better when I think back to what I was saying earlier, where I don't want to be pigeonholed to be just a tank. You know, and this is kind of what I was getting at. Eventually, I will be able to become a Mage Knight, at least, you know? Playing the Warrior class can be really boring and really, you know, tanking is not always that fun. But if I can look forward to becoming a Mage Knight and being able to do that DPS while still tanking, I'll be happy.
Yeah, and something that's really important to me that I kind of haven't mentioned yet is for me also to stick with an MMO, especially considering my, like, play style and lifestyle and stuff, is I need it to be, like obviously a bit solo-friendly, but also, like, duo-friendly. I don't want my options to be play in a group of five, probably strangers, or just not be able to play at all. Like, I would like to, oh, hey, one of my friends or one person I know is on. So, like, they're a priest, I'm a warrior, whatever. We can go play, we can do a bunch of stuff, and that'd be cool. So,
yeah. Well, I think Dragon Quest X is going to be ideal for folks who like to play that way. And we're going to get into why here in a little bit. Because Square's actually taken a lot of efforts to make sure that Dragon Quest X plays like any other in the franchise, in that you can play it by yourself. Of course, it is an MMO, so you can play with friends and you can party up with folks. They've actually implemented more measures as of late through recent patches to make sure that people are playing together, because they're actually running into a problem in the Japanese version. And that problem is that people are just logging on and playing by themselves. So Square has gone through great efforts to incorporate events and specific scenarios lately to sort of bring people together to make sure that folks are playing together. Because again, I think people see Dragon Quest and they immediately think this is a single player game, and they're not wrong. A lot of people just enjoy breezing through things by themselves, especially when it comes to this series particularly. So it's great to see that Square is sort of handling that and has kept that in mind in their design approach with the game at large. Of course, there is the trade-off, and they're running into that now, of where people just simply aren't making use of all of the content available because, again, they're not grouping up and playing together. So I think we're going to get a nice duality there, where you can play it by yourself if you want, and also if you've got friends, you can do that. The good news, and we'll get into this later, is that you can actually hire your friend's characters as support comrades, even if your friend is offline. So if you're wanting to take on a quest and you don't want to do it solo, or you can't do it solo, well, you can sign up your friend's characters, even if they're not playing, to come along with you, and the AI just takes over. And their character also receives a portion of the experience and money, and they don't even have to be online to play. And of course, the person playing at the time that none of their friends are on also get the bonus of having a party to actually be able to enjoy the content as it's meant to be enjoyed. So we'll get into that a bit more, but I think, Ryan, you're especially going to find this system conducive to your playstyle.
Yes, definitely.
Let's talk a little bit about customization. If you've played an MMO, you know that customizing is a huge part. It's one of the main things that keeps the genre going. People really get to personalize their own avatar. It's a whole unique experience based off of how much you can customize your guy, essentially, or girl. In the way of customization options, I immediately think of, what does the character creation screen look like in an MMO? When I first fire up the game, what are going to be the available options to me to make my guy different from the person next to me? Are you guys familiar with what the options are?
Oh, I'm not specifically in this game, but I assume it'll keep all the mainstays: hair, eye, maybe some sort of like facial features like scars and beards and things like that. I can't imagine it's going to stray too far away. I'm excited to play in the art style, though. I think they've got such a great art style. I was a little skeptical on 8 when they switched over. I wish I could remember the artist's name. The guy who did the Dragon Ball stuff.
Akira Toriyama.
Yeah, there you go. But, you know, from then, 9 really sold it to me, where I was like, okay, this actually fits so well with the Dragon Quest series. And I should correct myself, because they actually have been using that art style for a while, just not in-game. So I'm looking forward to just playing around and creating cool looking characters within that art style.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a long time defender, I guess, of Akira Toriyama's art. He gets a lot of flack, in especially in the States, and for, you know, the obvious reasons and stuff, and whatever. Like, I love Toriyama's art. I love early Dragon Ball stuff, Chrono Trigger, and everything he's done in Dragon Quest. So when I first started up Dragon Quest IX and got the chance to make, I guess you could say, my archetypal Toriyama characters, like, that was a great experience.
Right, yeah, that was a lot of fun for me too.
Sorry. Yeah, it's probably like the most I've enjoyed. DQ9 was probably the most I enjoyed creating a character since like the original Phantasy Star Online, which had, it probably has my favorite character creation ever in a game.
Agreed.
So yeah, I mean, DQ10, like, I played the PC beta, and it's very, it's similar to 9. I think there's more options than 9, I believe. But it all feels really good, and you could make your Toriyama character, basically.
I think you guys point out probably the most important part of the customization here, and that is the art style. If there's one thing that's going to set Dragon Quest X apart from its competition, it's not necessarily going to be its mechanics, because as we've talked about and as we'll continue to talk about, they're sort of tried and true. We know what to expect in most regards. But where it's really going to distinguish itself is in its art style. Ryan, I think you're totally right. Toriyama gets a bad rap here in the States, and I'm not quite sure why, because I find his work phenomenal. I think it's totally unique, and there's nothing like it. I think we Americans can sometimes look down on the anime art style, and really Toriyama's art style is synonymous with that kind of manga, anime, Japanese art direction. And I guess that's why so many people ride on it, but I love it. And so being able to, like you guys said, create my character within that kind of framework is going to be delightful. And I think it's going to be the thing that really sells Dragon Quest X as something unique. You can't get that in Final Fantasy XIV. You can't get it in Guild Wars. You can't get it in WoW or Star Wars, The Old Republic. So I think people are really going to be attracted to that. And I think they're going to have to be, because just like Ryan, I too played the PC beta. And when I went through the character creation process, I was actually sort of disappointed by the lack of options available. It's pretty comparable to Dragon Quest IX. But the problem with Dragon Quest IX is the options weren't all that vast to begin with. And in an MMO where you're running amidst so many other people, I want to make sure that the character that I create is one of a kind. I don't want to run through town and see 35 other dudes that look just like me. I want to make sure that my guy is individualized to that degree. And I'm not quite sure that you can fully grasp that in Dragon Quest X, because the options are fairly limited. Now, there are options. It's not like you've got three, you know, hairstyles, three eye types, and three height sizes. Actually, that height, I think, is accurate. But everything else, there are enough things there to sort of create your idealized version of this avatar in this world. I just hope that it's enough. Especially, like, gosh, I hate to make comparisons to, like, Guild Wars, but you go through, like, Guild Wars or Ion's character creation, and you're getting into, like, you know, the smallest details of where I can, like, you know, I can adjust the size of my cheekbones. That's pretty intense. I guess some people might like the accessibility of not having to deal with all of that stuff. What you see is what you get. I think some others are going to have a problem with it, though.
Well, as a counterpoint to that, because I was actually thinking a lot about Guild Wars 2, Guild Wars 2 as well, and I was thinking about, like, yeah, they've got a very intense character creator, and I really, like, that drew me to it initially, but overall, through playing the game, I felt like I had some of the issues you were describing earlier, where it's like, I don't feel very unique, and in my opinion, a lot of that came from just lack of variety in armor and equipment. And it's kind of become apparent to me, you know, you can spend 10 hours sculpting your face to look awesome, but how often are you ever seeing another MMO character's face that closely? Generally not that often, unless, you know, you're taking screenshots with a guild or something like that. It really comes down to getting a different overall look. I think, like, your silhouette in an MMO is way more important and really defines you as a lot more. And that's kind of where Dragon Quest IX shined, and what I'm hoping 10 will shine in is, like, the equipment will help define your character and look different from other characters enough to where it feels unique.
So you're making the claim that variety isn't as important in the initial creation process as it is in terms of what you're actually going to look like in the game, because you'll be able to acquire various armor sets.
Right, yeah. You could spend 10 hours, or you could spend an hour just trying to get the right hair and the right hair color and things like that. Like I did that in 14. Spent a lot of time, and then now for the past 10 hours I've been wearing a hat and I haven't seen my hair. You know, and it's that happens all the time. You don't see all those little things that you do spend a lot of time caring about and tweaking if you're someone like me, a heavy customizer. I am hoping to see things like armor dyes and things like that, because I feel like that adds a little bit more variety to the look. But I'm assuming they're going to have a ton of content, and that's, you know, just a variety of armor and types of armor and things you can have at different levels. I think we'll do a lot more to add variety to the characters than having an in-depth character customization tool where I can make my nose a little bit longer than my friends, you know?
Sure. Well, so we get into this other aspect of the character creation process in Dragon Quest X, and Ryan will know what I'm talking about here since he's played the demo. You don't just create your character upon startup. You actually create a sibling, and you're sort of given all the same options to create them as you were given to create your own avatar. What do you guys think of this? Kind of unique.
I'm not 100% clear what, maybe I'm a novice here, but what the point of the sibling is. Like, what does your sibling do? Is it support for when you go back to your home, or what is it?
I actually have no idea.
So you didn't run into any use for your sibling when you guys were playing the beta?
I didn't in beta. I don't know if you did, Ryan, but
no.
I think your sibling plays a big role in the offline portion of the game. I don't think they come into play at all online. Maybe they might be like in your house or something at some point, but generally speaking, they're with you for the single player campaign. I think this is kind of interesting in that I can't think of another MMO that does it. I also think, I guess immediately it comes to mind, like, well, is there a purpose for this? I mean, it's kind of cool to have a little sibling that I can, like, interact with, I guess. I'm just not sure, like, you know, it totally matters, but I like the idea that we're given the option, at least.
Yeah, I think it's innovative. It's an interesting idea. And now hearing that it's part of the single-player mission, I wonder if maybe at some point your sibling gets stolen and you're trying to, like, save them back, or if something like that happens, that might be a cool way, you know, you're going to feel more invested in a character that looks the way you want to, and trying to save that character could be pretty cool. Yeah, I do scratch my head wondering, like, what's the point? Why I create so much more friction in the first, you know, hour of the game, having people create two characters. Yeah, just what's the big whoop? Like, what is it all about?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, like, my two theories that I just came up with now is it could be, like you were saying, like, kind of a plot contrivance with it getting stolen or whatever. Like, kind of like the dog in Fable 2, if you guys have played that. It's, like, a means to get you invested in the story or whatever. Or it could just be, like, straight up, like, otaku pandering, because, like, little sister stuff is huge right now, and, like, you want your super cute little sister to protect or whatever. I have no idea.
I bet it's the latter. I bet it's the latter of those options. So.
Maybe.
No, I have no idea. I know that you can play you can play your sibling's story offline, though I've heard it's not all that interesting. So, yeah, take
you know, maybe here I've got like a fourth theory now, and I'll out in my theorizing, but maybe it's to, you know, like we were talking about how you lose the ability to be a human pretty quickly in the beginning of the game, or maybe not so quickly. Maybe it's kind of them throwing you a bone, like, okay, if you really want to play a human character in this Dragon Quest world, here's a sibling you can play as. And it might not be the most interesting game, but, like, if you want it, here it is.
Sure, so sort of like splitting the difference.
Exactly. Giving everybody something.
Yeah, so, okay, so if we move past the character creation screen, we're initially left with gameplay. In an MMO, I think the bulk of the gameplay comes from combat, especially something like Dragon Quest X, where, and I shouldn't even say Dragon Quest X, as we talked about before, one of the things that has made Dragon Quest what it is the combat. There's a heavy emphasis on grinding, and if there's also one thing we know about MMOs, there's a heavy emphasis on grinding as well. So it seems like that marriage just makes a lot of sense. So I want to spend a little bit of time talking about the combat. And I made this comparison earlier, but I think it probably especially applies now. We can think of the combat in Dragon Quest X as sort of Final Fantasy XI meets Dragon Quest IX. And basically what that means is the combat is turn-based, but you have the ability to move about the battlefield freely. So there's no, you know, standing in place like there has been in the traditional Dragon Quest games. And it really is akin to Final Fantasy XI's battling system, almost to a T. Because it's not like you have a hot bar. You don't, you don't press the one key to do a sword attack and the two key to do some extra special ability. You're actually choosing from menus. It's a menu system just like the menu system presented in the previous games. If you want to attack, you highlight the attack option, you click the confirm button, that brings up a separate box that gives you all of your different attack skills, and voila, there you go. You attack that way. So in that sense, the game very much so sticks to its roots. I guess what I'm wondering, I personally dig the idea of kind of this old school MMO system, especially because it does sound a lot like Final Fantasy XI's combat, and I loved XI's combat because it is kind of entrenched in this old school design philosophy. But I can immediately think that people are going to wonder, is that kind of combat mechanic dynamic enough? When MMOs appear to be straying from that tried and true formula of point and click and gearing more towards kind of action-oriented combat, is something this kind of slow-paced, is that going to be welcome by folks?
Yes. personally, I think it's great the way combat works in this game. I mean, it's very Dragon Quest-esque. Like, you run it, you hit an enemy on the map screen, and it takes you into, like, a combat screen, all the way back to Dragon Quest I. And it kind of shows you have, like, for a split second when the combat starts, you have kind of a first-person view of the enemies, so that's very, you know, kind of harkening back to the series roots. And then it's totally menu based, and I think that's cool, because I don't think every MMO needs to play exactly the same way to use kind of the, I guess now it's sort of become the World of Warcraft template, where you just have your like 8 hot bars up there covering half your screen. And you're just like, 1, 2, 3, 4, Control 1, Control 2, Control 3. Like, I was, even in Final Fantasy 14, I was kind of feeling the burnout a bit on that type of gameplay. And like you said, they are moving to somewhat more action-y elements in MMOs. Like in 14, you do have to dodge some attacks and stuff. Neverwinter, which was recently released, has more of an action influence, but it's still that kind of that hot bar, typing numbers in order gameplay. And I think this is cool. It feels, even though it's like as old as JRPGs themselves, like, it weirdly feels fresh to me.
Yeah, that was the thing that really, when I first heard about this, I was like, how are they going to do battling? Because their standard has been so different from the trajectory of standard RPGs for the past 10 years, you know, where everybody else has gone a lot more action-oriented, a lot more real-time, active-time battling systems, stuff like that. Dragon Quest has always just kept that menu-based system, and I don't know what it is, but it's what initially attracted me to the series, was just something about it is just really fun. Like, they have not updated their battling system that much over the years, and it's just, I cannot get enough of it. Like, I just keep loving the grind. And so when I heard about the MMO, I was like, how are they going to do this? And it sounds great. Like I said before, I love the grind in Dragon Quest games, and I generally hate that in every other RPG. And so it's such a perfect fit for the online gaming world. If it's going to be a grind, at least make it like some magical, fun grind. I have no idea how they do it, because it makes no sense on paper. Right?
No, you're right. There's something almost like mesmeric in the menu system that Dragon Quest has always used. It's almost like entrancing, hypnotizing to a degree, of where you get into this rhythm of just clicking through the menus and clicking your attacks. You know exactly where they are. You know exactly how many you have to scroll through to get to a certain spell that you know you have to use once something has happened in the battle. And I'm so happy to see that has stayed intact in Dragon Quest X. It's stayed so true to what the series has always been about. While so many other franchises, yeah, they are kind of quote-unquote evolving, Dragon Quest has been the one that's remained constant. It's never wavered. It's always known who it is. And it's never tried to be something it's not. It's kind of like, do what you're good at and stay to it. You know, don't fix what isn't broken. And that seems to be fully intact here in Dragon Quest X. And yeah, I mean, like you guys are saying, I just, there's something great about going up and kind of running into an enemy, and then the screen swirling and going into a separate battling screen, even though it's not a separate battling screen, because once you get past kind of like the swirly screen, it's basically the same persistent world that you've been in. But just the mirage is enough for me, because it reminds me of, yeah, all the way back to Dragon Warrior, of where the screen swirls and you know exactly what to expect when that starts happening. It's like you prepare yourself. It's time to battle. You get into that mindset. And yeah, you're not getting into key combos. You know, I'm not hitting 1, 3, 4, 5, 1, 3, 4, 5, 6, 1, 3, 4, 5. You know, that gets obnoxious after a while. And so yeah, there are MMOs out there that are like Guild Wars or Terra, or even free-to-play ones like Dragon Nest, that are trying to do these more action-oriented combat mechanics. But I don't know about you guys, part of what makes the MMO genre such a favorite of mine is how relaxing it is. It's one of the only game genres that I can turn on and that I can actually de-stress and not feel more stressed or feel a heightened sense of anxiety because I'm playing. And I think this battling system for me is going to lend itself well to that kind of play style, where all these other MMOs are getting so stressful. I just want something basic. Just give me the basics. And Dragon Quest X seems to be doing that.
Yeah, definitely. And I like the fact that your battle is your battle. And a problem I've been having in Final Fantasy XIV is, especially in the beginning areas, there are so many people going for so many enemies, and enemy like area of effect spells can hit you even if you're not in combat with the enemy and stuff in that. And it becomes, again, it's like an extra layer of stress, because you're like, oh, I need to pull this enemy over here because there's people battling over here and stuff. And I like it being your own, you know, your own personal Dragon Quest battle every time.
Yeah, I'll agree with that too. And a lot of MMOs have gone the direction where it's like they're trying to blur that line between battling and exploring and keeping it all very like dynamic, and better watch out while you're running around because you might get attacked. But I almost see it as you know, you're taking one step backwards, but two forward by clearly dividing that up. Like, I know when I'm in a battle, I know when I'm out of a battle in Dragon Quest X, and that sounds awesome. I don't want to have to deal with that stress of just kind of, like, things can turn on a dime. Suddenly, I'm being, you know, I got aggro from some crazy monster I wasn't able to handle, and I'll have to run back to base so that the NPC guards can take care of it, or I zone it, or whatever.
Yeah, no, I like the idea that no one can come up and start attacking what I'm attacking. I love that. The battle is mine, like you guys have said. It's not someone else's, and someone can't come and hijack it, essentially. At least, I don't think they can, from everything that I've seen. And so I do think that it gives that sense of this is mine, and this is part of my journey. Not part of, you know, the dude next to me who's also killing the same slime that I am. This one here that I'm focusing on, this one's solely mine, and I like that exclusivity and kind of that ownership over the battling mechanics and the whole battle scenario. So I dig that. What I also dig is the level cap. So right now, initially when DQX10 shipped last year, the level cap was 50. Patch 1.5 is in the works now. It's coming out sometime soon in Japan. There hasn't been a hard release date yet, but we've seen that the cap is going to be raised to 75, and word is that it's going to stay at 75 for a while. First off, that's pretty huge that essentially the level cap has gone up by 25 levels in the year that Dragon Quest X has been out. But I'm glad to see that the developers are reining it in and are saying, okay, yeah, we recognize we've been raising the level cap pretty drastically with each patch, and now we're going to start slowing it down, and this is going to be the level cap for a while. I guess, what do you guys think? If, you know, when we get the game, is it going to launch with the cap being at 50? Will it be at 60? Will it be at 65? Will it be 75? How do you think they'll do that?
Well, it's yet to be seen how they're going to handle some of these updates that they've done Japan side. I assume we're probably going to get the newest version of the game, as that's just what often happens. So we'll probably get the 75 cap if that's what they've decided they're going to do. I kind of really like the idea of capping at 50. Dragon Quest has always been a game about, you know, very low level caps, because like we were talking earlier, levels mean more in a Dragon Quest game. It's a significant improvement. It's not like an incremental, oh, you got one more stat point in this area. You really, really feel it when you level up. So having 50 times through my play session, those huge, significant improvements, I think that sounds incredible. I've been tired of the way that levels have been handled as these little, like, you know, just a little bit of sugar to make the poison go down, as they have been in so many other MMOs. I'm ready for the more broad sweeping big level updates. And 75 starts to seem a little too much like the World of Warcraft thing. I don't want it to be tiny incremental upgrades.
Yeah, I agree. And I have no idea. I don't know what the level numbers mean in DQ10. Like, I really don't know how long it takes to get from level 40 to 41. In this game, does anyone have like a general idea of like what it takes for to hit the level cap? Did people hit the level cap in the first month, or are people just hitting it now, or what's the deal?
I sort of have some information on that. So one thing that people have talked about since launch, the leveling in Dragon Quest X is extremely slow. Yes. To the point where people actually started complaining, saying that the grind was just becoming unbearable, you know, when you went from 40 to 50. Which, let me just say, if you play a Dragon Quest game, you should know that's what you're in for.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't, I mean, yeah, you're not going to be jumping 10 levels in the span of 2 hours. That's not what Dragon Quest is all about. And I liked what you said, Brandon, in that keeping the level cap at maybe 50. And by seeing all of this information coming out of people saying it takes so long to gain a level, I feel like that really, it means something. Like, when you just going from level 30 to 31 means something. Going from level 30 to 31 in Final Fantasy 14 took me no time at all. I did it in one sitting, and it meant nothing. I didn't care that I got to level 31. All I cared about is I wanted to get to level 32 already. That's not how it is with Dragon Quest in my experience. I mean, just for a point of reference, I'm playing through Dragon Warrior 1 right now for an episode that we're going to do later on down the line. And I'm just basking in how awesome it is leveling up in that game, because it takes so long and it's such an accomplishment. Just going from level 7 to 8, I was pumped. I was excited. My girlfriend's laying next to me in bed and I'm like, honey, I just got to level 8. And she looks at me like, is that supposed to mean something? But it did. And I hope, and I am sort of seeing how that's being sustained in Dragon Quest X. But no, to answer your question directly, Ryan, I don't know if it takes like 75 hours to go from level 1 to 50. I sure hope not. I hope this is like Final Fantasy XI hardcore, where it takes a long time. I don't want to burn out, you know?
My worry hearing about them increasing the level cap too is I'm worried that they may be playing up to your MMO player's standards, where people are probably just rushing through the game as quickly as possible. I don't see this as one of those games. This doesn't seem like one where you're just going to race to the cap and then play in-game stuff. I think it's going to be more about the journey, which your average MMO player is not used to, and may have to do with the reason for increasing the cap, just because that sounds like a good stat to your average MMO player. Like, oh yeah, more levels, great, that sounds like more content. For me, I think it's, I'm approaching it more as a Dragon Quest game than an MMO game, and I hope the developers keep that vision in line, despite the audience.
Yeah, I really hope they don't go down the route that you just described, because that would just be really tragic, I think, because, I mean, this game, for the mainstream, this DQ10 can't even compete with Final Fantasy XIV, for the at least for the Western mainstream, and, I mean, there's no way it's going to be able to compete with, like, when, like, Elder Scrolls Online launches on Xbox One and PS4, like, and whatever Blizzard's next MMO is. Like, it really needs to just know its audience and kind of go with that.
I agree. I think your typing's really loud, Brandon. You're hammering away at those keys. No, I agree. There are so many big players coming out in the MMO world in the next, I don't know, few months, few years. Yeah, I mean, just Elder Scrolls by itself is going to absorb such a giant portion of the market. And Final Fantasy XIV has already absorbed a giant portion of the market. It's been, the numbers that I've seen in terms of sales have been impressive. So Dragon Quest X really needs to do something different in terms of making the experience feel totally unique. And I think the one way to do that is exactly what you guys are saying. Make it seem like leveling up in Dragon Quest X actually means something to the player. Make it a feat. Make it an accomplishment to go from level 39 to 40, and not just another number like it feels like in every other MMO.
This kind of brings us to our next point, but like, I kind of got worried when we were talking about support comrades earlier. That's the mode where you're able to play with a friend's character and they can gain experience without that friend actually playing. Basically being able to rent your friends to come party with you, or your friend's character.
While they're offline.
Yeah. I'm worried that's going to undermine the whole experience. I've played MMOs in the past, and generally my friends always get way further ahead than me because I don't have as much time to play, or I choose not to play as much. And then I'm kind of left in the dust. I'm worried here where my friends will continue playing, but will just level my character through the roof. And suddenly, when I left off at level 10, I'm going to come back and I'll have a level 15 guy, and I won't get any of that excitement of, you know, each of those little tiny increment, or those big incremental levels. What do you guys think? Do you know if there's any sort of protection for this in the game, or what?
Not that I know of. I think it comes down to kind of like personalized management and communicating with your friends of, hey dude, don't level my guy three levels. I want to actually be able to do that myself. I have some thoughts on this, but I'm going to throw it to Ryan first. How do you feel about this?
Well, it sounded like a really good idea when I first heard about it, but now thinking about what Brandon just said, now I'm like, oh, geez, yeah. I don't know. I mean, I would hope that the XP that you get from that is pretty negligible. Like, maybe it's comparable to, like, rest XP in other MMOs or something. Or, I mean, it would be, I think it would almost be better if they just did, like, you got, like, a financial reward.
That would be interesting.
Like, you got gold instead of XP. Or if there was a slider or something where you could be like, I want more XP than gold.
Oh, yeah.
Or vice versa. So it would depend on how they handle it. It could be good or bad. I don't know.
I'm also wondering if maybe, you know, we're hearing that, like, it takes a long time to get from level to level. Maybe just the amount of time that your friend would spend in there would seem like more of a benefit than it would be a drawback, where it's like, oh, thank God, this is like an hour of gameplay that I don't have to play. You know, we all love grinding in the game, but it might be so negligible towards your full level experience bar that it wouldn't be that big of a deal if your friend jumped on and played with your character for an hour. Another thing they may do is just keep you, that not let you level up when you're using another person's character. Just keep you at the level, but gain you all the experience up until that level. I think that would be okay with me as well. This is something that I'm equally excited and nervous about for the game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think how it works. First off, I think, yeah, the XP that you do earn while offline is marginal. It's not a ton. And I think, and I totally could be wrong in this, but I think the player has the option to toggle this on or off, that they can choose to earn experience by, you know, fiddling with something in the menu that says support comrade, earn experience, yes or no, and you click yes or you click no if you don't want that. So I think you do have some sort of say in whether or not this works in the way that you were talking about earlier. I would wonder, though, if I have misinterpreted that information and there isn't a way to toggle this option on and off, if they only give you, like, a certain limit, you know, let's say they're going to allow you to earn 5,000 XP, and then if the person continues adventuring with your offline character, you're still going to be there and you're still going to help out. You just simply won't get any experience beyond that point. Because they don't want people to do this either. They don't want friends leveling up other friends and power leveling them, because essentially that means everyone's going to race to the in-game content, and every MMO developer knows that when people hit the in-game content, they start losing people. People get bored, people get burned out, people drop off, and so they want to make the game as gruesome as possible up until that point, unless they have a specific kind of plan for what the in-game is going to be. But from my understanding, Dragon Quest isn't like a huge in-game heavy type of experience. So I think that they are going to be policing this, or going to integrate some kind of system that polices it so that you're not going to run into that problem. Again, they don't want that. It remains to be seen what exactly will happen. I think it's kind of a cool mechanic, though.
I do, too. I'm mostly excited about it. I'm just a little nervous. I have faith in Square Enix that they're going to maintain that same level of attention to... They're not going to allow people to break the game through this. I can imagine people paying, you know, just like gold farmers, paying other people to level their characters, and that just seems weird. I'm not too worried. I think they're going to be careful about it, and I'm mostly excited to be able to come back and see, like, oh, wow, Bradley just played with my character and got me a little bit of experience. Thanks, Bradley. Yeah.
Well, and to that end, I kind of like the idea, like, if let's say you guys are offline, but I kind of want to adventure, I want to explore or do battles or whatever, or level up with your guys' character. I think it does kind of create this, like, sort of, and I hope this doesn't sound strange, but I think it does kind of create this bonding kind of experience to your friends' characters. And I think that's pretty cool. Like, yeah, Ryan and Brandon aren't online right now. But I can play with their character still, and it still gives me a sense that, like, I'm playing with you guys, but indirectly. I don't know. I kind of like that.
Yeah, I do too. Or, like, getting a text message from you to be like, hey, Brandon, I just actually found this awesome armor that I gave to your guy when we were playing together. Like, congratulations. That sounds kind of cool. It's almost like playing a single-player RPG with your other friend's characters from it or something. It's such a weird, interesting...
Which is becoming a thing, so it kind of makes sense.
I have got to get out of here, but this has been great talking with you guys. We still have tons to talk about, I think, in the next episode. I'm thinking things that we haven't covered, monthly fees, how it's going to work in the West. We compared it to some other games, but I think there's a lot more to talk about. So I think, you know, if any of the listeners here are interested, please give us feedback. We'd like to know if you like what we're talking about. If you have any feedback you would like to give us, feel free to email us. And just kind of support the show if you want to hear more of it.
Yeah, no, I think this is a natural stopping point for the first episode. We've covered a lot of ground today. And we've already been talking, for all you listeners out there, we have some stuff coming down the pipe of what we plan to do for future episodes. As I mentioned before, this is a podcast exclusively dedicated to Dragon Quest X and covering everything that comes out around Dragon Quest X. And at the same time, we also understand that folks who are going to be playing Dragon Quest X are probably fans of the DQ franchise in general. And so we want to also spend some time talking about the franchise at large, discussing sort of how the series got to the point of where it is now. And that's what we plan to do, actually. We plan to have, in going forward in our future episodes, we plan to do some retrospectives on every Dragon Quest game to date. And we figure that in our next episode, we're actually going to highlight Dragon Warrior 1, the first Dragon Quest game for NES and Game Boy Color. So you can sort of expect that to be the game plan and going forward. We're going to come back, and we've got plenty to talk about still for Dragon Quest X, but we also want to shoe in some of these chats about the Dragon Quest series at large, and that's what we're going to do. Would you add anything to that, Ryan?
No. Yeah, basically... This is, like, I fell in love with the idea when you first talked to me about this, because it's just a chance to talk about Dragon Quest a lot. And you know, it also, like, I like the idea of kind of revisiting older games in the series, because, you know, that gives me an extra incentive to, you know, play or replay these kind of classic games that are fundamental to the genre of video games that I love and the series that I love. And I think that will be very good while we're kind of biding time, waiting to see whatever Square Enix or Nintendo decides to do with DQ10 in as far as a Western release goes.
Yeah, and I want to throw this out there to you guys at home as well. You know, our plan is we're going to chronicle all of the Dragon Quest games and, of course, start with the original like we talked about. If you guys want to join along in that process, go for it. Do it with us. I think it would be cool if we could all be playing these games in order leading up to Dragon Quest X when it finally launches here in North America. And so we'd like to hear from you. We want to hear from you with any questions you have, any comments you have about the episode. You can write us, tell us that we're terrible. Tell us that we probably should make a second episode, or you could write us and say that you love us and that you'll buy us pizza and beer, preferably beer, please. And also, you can give us some thoughts on if you want to join in on our playing of all of the Dragon Quest games. You know, send us some of your thoughts. Send us some of your questions about the first Dragon Quest game, since that's the one that we're going to be tackling between now and our next episode and then talking about in our next episode. We want to hear from you guys as well. Hear about your experiences. Maybe you're not replaying the game right now. That's fine, but maybe you have in the past or you've played it sometime in your life. Send us your comments. Send us anything. We want this to be a show that has a community, and we want to build that because there doesn't seem to be a community for Dragon Quest X yet, and we kind of want to spearhead that effort. So, all the mail, all the questions, comments, concerns can go to slimegrindradio@gmail.com. So that's exactly how it sounds. SLIMEGRINDRADIO@gmail. And we will return in the coming weeks with episode 2, fully ready to sit down and chat more about everything concerning Dragon Quest X and, of course, Dragon Warrior 1. If you want to get in contact with us, though, between episodes, you can check out my Twitter. I'm at Bradley Hailstorm. That's BradleyHaleStorm, Storm. What about you guys? You guys want to throw that out there?
I've got a Twitter at Locksmith Art. Locksmith is spelled weird. It's LOXMYTH Art. You can contact me on Twitter there, or email us at the email. We'll read all your emails. May read some of them on the air. What about you, Ryan?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at Brawndwarf, BrawnDwarf.
Very cool. All right. Thank you, everyone, for sitting through our ramblings here. And hopefully you've enjoyed it. And hopefully we will see you again next time.
Take it easy. I never know how to end podcasts. Ever. It's always so awkward.